You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and he says what she used to always say.
Hello and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. It's the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. This is your host, Alex Goff, and this week I'm joined by Big D. What's going on, Big D?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing very, very well. Nothing specifically, I guess, just overall I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing very, very good. I'm 30, I look 20, and I feel 10, so have at it.
Feeling 10. What is one aspect that is positive about feeling 10?
Well, I still, even though I'm 30 years old, I still tend to take time to play with toys.
Oh, there you go.
So, and I still got my Ninja Turtles movie poster on my wall. The 1989 movie, the 90 movie, not the 2014 one, just to make that clear.
Okay, so last night was a pretty big day in the world of combat sports. There was a few different events, and in lieu of watching any of those events, what did you do last night, Dan? Big D?
You were about to call me by real name. You can call me that if you want. It doesn't matter. No, I actually didn't do any of that. Bro, I feel weird. I didn't do any of that, of those three things. I recorded a podcast last night, and before I recorded a podcast, I went back and I watched, because really, okay, most Saturday nights, dude, I just, like, go out, you know, and usually do something. Like, I was going to go see Godzilla or whatever. Instead, last night, I just decided to chill at home. Just because I wanted to just relax, and I was watching some old Nitros from old WCW Nitros from early 99, because I have all the Nitros up until 98, so I started watching the 99 ones just to kind of refresh my memory, because during that time period, I didn't watch a lot of WCW. I was watching a lot of WWF, like most people, and I picked up on some things that I don't remember, and that's kind of what I do sometimes. I just go back and just watch the television start to finish, because I really do love pro wrestling, bro. Like, real talk, it's gonna kill my attraction with all your female listeners here, but I'm one of those guys who can watch old wrestling all day and not get bored. That's just me, though.
So what are some takeaways you learned from watching 1999 Nitro?
Well, I'm planning to do a podcast about this one of these days, like later on, but I watched the finger poke of doom again, right? And yeah, it was stupid, and I'm sure that the Death of WCW book, the reissue coming out this fall, is going to talk about it. It was very stupid. There's no question about it. However, I feel, if you go back and watch television, I feel that Goldberg could have still been salvaged. I feel that the company, even though that was a really stupid decision, there still was a chance, because Goldberg runs back out after the show, gets a huge pop. Yeah, you fucked the fans, which they did do, out of the Goldberg match, and it was in Atlanta, 40,000 people. But he comes back out, gets a big pop, and then the NWO reunites, like the red and white and black reunite, and they beat the hell out of him. So I picked up on the fact that I think that it was stupid, but he still could have been salvaged. If they booked him to run through the NWO, like one by one, and get the belt back, it would have been, WCW would have probably still been okay. But then they had Ric Flair and Hogan do a double turn. They gave the belt to DDP. Like, they just kind of totally went off of what they should have done. And that's, to me, what ruined it. Also, I didn't even remember, but in between the finger poke of doom and the next Nitro, that's when Eddie Guerrero had his accident. You know, when he I believe that's when he felt when he got drunk and he, like, drove off the freeway. And I always wondered, how did they blow off the LWO? Like, I don't remember how they did it. And then now watching it back, I remember, or now I know. They had Ric Flair come out and call out the LWO, and he basically offered them tequila and a trip to Tijuana. Even though they're Mexicans and are from the place, somehow this made them give up the LWO T-shirts, and that was the blow-off to the LWO. They also turned Conan babyface on that show because Luger was beating up Rey Mysterio. Conan comes out and goes, you know, leave him alone. He's just a little brother, and then, like, a little brother to me. And then you know, Nash and Luger and the NWO beat up Conan. But what's funny about that is the whole reason that Conan turned heel was because he broke Rey Mysterio's leg. So it didn't really make a lot of sense. You know, all of a sudden, you know, he's the reason you became a bad guy, and now he's the reason you became a good guy. So that's kind of what I picked up from it. And I also picked up the fact that they still had a lot of great wrestlers around that time. A lot of great matches, dude. A lot of good stuff, and it just got squandered. So I don't want to go on too much on that, because I know that's not what this show's about, but just to answer your question, there you go. Long-winded as it may be.
Well, what's interesting to me is that Death of WCW, which is a great book, and very excited for the re-release of Death of WCW. It was a book, it was one of the books that I read in just one sitting. I mean, I was just intrigued by WCW. But one of the things is that, okay, the Fanger Poke of Doom, right? We've always heard that term. Scott Keith used to, you know, he popularized it in a lot of his columns back in the day. But, you know, that's what it's always been known as, Fanger Poke of Doom. But when you look at Hogan, right, Hogan's run was ended with a twin referee angle, you know, and they were able to capitalize by, you know, the belt going to Savage. But the belt wasn't even supposed to go to Savage, if you remember. It was going to Ted DiBiase. And so what I find interesting is that sometimes, you know, it's a combination of luck and skill sometimes. Because imagine what would happen to WWF in 88, 89. Ted DiBiase would have been the world champion. Obviously he would have feuded with Hogan. What would have become of Savage? There was no impetus for the Savage face turn. It would have been interesting moving forward.
Yeah, and to me, they did the right thing. And it's funny because WCW, so Goldberg ended up getting his revenge on Nash at Spring Stampede like 3 months later. And to me, I feel it was too late, bro. Because, like, I don't understand what the booking mentality was, but for some reason, Goldberg went to go feud with Bam Bam Bigelow, which they did build up in late 98, but that's not really a pay-per-view match, if you ask me. I mean, it might be, but not after you do this angle with the finger poke. And then Nash went to go feud with Rey Mysterio, which led to him getting his mask taken off. And then they finally had the match, and Goldberg went over, but by then, it was too late. And then they booked Goldberg against, you know, the Steiner brothers. And again, it was like, okay, are you not going to give this guy the belt back? I mean, when he was your champion, if you look at the ratings, and I broke this down on my 30 for 30 show, if you look at the ratings, when Goldberg won the belt, there were about 4 weeks straight where they beat Raw in the ratings. So there was genuine interest in Goldberg being a star. WCW ran 3 dome shows at the end of 98 because of Goldberg. They ran St. Louis, I think it was Tacoma, and the Georgia Dome. So there's all these different things that tell you this is the guy, and they just kept, you know, pushing him back and back and back. And that to me is what really killed it. When people noticed, okay, he's not going to get the belt back. He's not going to get pushed, you know. Meanwhile, WWF is putting on this crazy TV with Austin and Rock and Mick, and there was no competition.
So we're unfortunately living in 98, 99, 2000, which 2000 WWE, many people consider, you know, that would be interesting to go back and watch that because of the high acclaim it gets historically. But last night was 3 events, none of which you checked out, so we will discuss those in short a little bit later. But right now, I want to talk about the bubble that was the WWE stock. What are your thoughts post popping of the bubble?
I mean, I don't know, man. I'm not a shareholder. I suppose if I was a shareholder, I'd be angry, unless I was smart enough to sell the thing when it was at its highest. But, I've actually, people don't agree with this, and that's fine. That's okay. I feel that the reason why the stock had this drop, I mean, okay, one reason is obvious, because when they got the NBC Universal deal publicized, it wasn't what they were trying to hype up, okay? Like, they totally dangled the carrot in front of the shareholders. Like, I totally get that. That's one reason. But also, I feel that another reason that this whole bubble popped is because of the network not doing the million subscribers that they needed to break even. And even though when that number came out, you know, the stocks did go up, it was still one of those things where it was like, wait a minute, like, you know, now it's two carrots being dangled in front of us. You know what I mean? I think it was both, even though I think the TV deal was really like the big like caveat, because like the first one was kind of like, okay, well, that's fine. You know, we didn't get a million subscribers. Let's see if we get a good TV deal. You know, maybe that will supplement the income. And then they did get a good TV deal, but they didn't get what was promised, I suppose, what was dangled in front of people. And Vince McMahon lost like $350 million. That's crazy. It's crazy.
I've made this point on a few other shows historically, but when we talk about the professional wrestling business, Vince McMahon is in a different business. I mean, Vince McMahon, the first professional wrestling company to go public. I mean, I'm watching Ring of Honor television right now, and these are concerns Ring of Honor would never, ever have to worry about. And so it's interesting that Vince McMahon has positioned himself in this way, and you know, he's surrounded...
More money, more problems, is that what you're saying?
Well, essentially that, but I mean, you know, he was a very, very smart professional wrestling promoter. He was able to leverage a time in which the company was at the peak and was able to get a lot of money to go public. But unfortunately, when you go public during that time, I mean, I can't even envision a day where professional wrestling will be as hot as what it was during that time, and I really can't envision anything being, well, I guess that's not fair to say because I guess the NFL is huge, but professional wrestling, I can never envision it being as big as what it was then ever again, and I know that's a very strong statement to make. Oh, Alex, you know, I just don't think that's the way things are going anymore.
No, and last time we did a show, you and I said that. I remember specifically saying on this show, I said, this network might, I mean, I understand, I respect the risk, but the network, you know, gutting the pay-per-views, that might not be such a good idea, you know, really. We don't know yet. We'll know by the end of the year, right? The jury's still out on that. But we did talk about how, I agree with you, there's no way that pro wrestling is ever going to be what it was. And I don't care if you find a big star. I mean, maybe if they find, like, I don't know, man. It's going to have to take, like, a legitimate superstar. And I just don't think society will accept it because too many distractions now. We have Netflix. We have the Internet. We have, you know, the Internet. Bro, you can go on the Internet and literally, and I know people who do this, literally spend all day on YouTube, all day, just watching, you know, you've got this really high-quality television like Breaking Bad, you know, these TV shows, Game of Thrones, they're breaking these ratings numbers, and they're doing compelling television that WWE has not done for years and years, with the exception of a few times here and there. So it's just, you know, it's never going to happen, bro. It's just never going to happen. I think there's always going to be wrestling. There's always going to be a fan base. People will always watch it. But as far as it being so mainstream that everybody watches it like they did back in 1999, it's just never going to happen.
Okay.
There's a lot of reasons why, but we don't have to get into it.
Well, and I mean, real quickly, I want to go into a little bit deeper reason why I think it's not going to happen is because one of the things that just scrolled across my news feed is the fact that AT&T is buying DirecTV. Listen, these telecommunications companies are merging, becoming bigger. I mean, you have WWE. I would like to look at the history of this, the different companies WWE's negotiated with just to get on to USA. But now they're negotiating with NBC, Comcast, this giant conglomerate. And these companies are not as interested in the independent Internet taking off, right? They want to increase the grip on the old way that content was delivered. And it's really, I think, at a point where I don't know if we're over the tipping point yet or if we're almost there, that media online is being consumed. this is not a professional wrestling talk at all. I believe it was last year, Jenna Marbles went on the Today Show. Have you seen this?
No, I'm not.
Are you familiar with Jenna Marbles?
Jenna Marbles. Is that like a model or something? I have no idea, dude. I'm out of the loop now.
Okay, she does a YouTube show, right? And I'm going to YouTube this really quickly just so I can give you some kind of number. She does she just posts videos on YouTube, and from what I understand, I've never looked into the business metrics of YouTube, but I mean, obviously it's some kind of successful. Okay, I'm going to look at her most recent video on her page. It's done 1 million views. Her video before that did 1 million views. A video before that did 2 million. Okay, so she posts a video, 2.3 million. Okay, so she posts a video on YouTube. She's getting 1 million to 2.3 million views on YouTube. Okay?
Yeah.
She was on the Today Show, I believe, last year. And they treat these internet people like they're just the local performers at the local circus or something. Like these people, and these people are not, they don't have the backing of, if you go on the Today Show, you're part of the NBC Universe Comcast family, and you're an official guy, right? Because you're on NBC Universal Comcast, the conglomerate. But Jenna Marbles, well, she's a joke. Jenna Marbles is doing 2 million views on YouTube. And I don't know where we're at as far as the pendulum swinging, but it's not moving toward these conglomerates. I don't think people are going to consume media in the same way moving forward. And WWE, I think the network, man, the timing may be the only problem. You know, I talked to Todd and I talked to Ben Miller about this, and Garrett Gonzalez a few podcasts ago. I think the timing was the issue, but the direction, you know, what's funny is originally the network was supposed to be another pay channel. That's what it was going to be.
Yeah.
And
then the Oprah thing happened, and
everyone made fun of it. Everyone said that's the wrong direction. But when they announced the network in its current form, that is the right direction. Is because you're going to be able to develop a niche audience, and the niche audience for this thing is going to be wrestling fans of every generation, because you can consume the old media, and if you're a new fan, you can consume the new media. I'm not quite sure how you develop new fans off of it. That's going to be the hard part. It's how you're going to develop new fans. But to cater to your niche with this thing, it's the direction everyone's moving in.
I just want to say one thing. Maybe the only way I can think of it, they can develop new fans, is if they put non-wrestling content on there, which is not going to be a good thing. Like if they put, if they start putting shows like Game of Thrones or whatever on there, like Netflix does. But I still don't think that's going to really help, because it's got that WWE name, bro. And as you know, when you go to the movies and it's a WWE film, it's almost always going to be a failure because of that name. And it's unfortunate, but that's how it is.
Absolutely. And I don't know if we'll ever get a competitive company to World Wrestling Entertainment.
Maybe
market share is a little bit too far. But, I'm hearing about, from the preliminary stuff, I'm hearing about the Jared's promotion. And whenever I get the press releases, I mean, this is the problem, is that professional wrestling and media has changed. And you got some smart people who are able to keep up with it. But the thing is you still need money, but I don't even think you need the amount of money Heyman needed at like the height of ECW. I mean, it's really starting to turn to where I think that a company not Ring of Honor, but like Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor is going to present the old television-based wrestling content, that because they're owned by a television company that is taking over all of these networks no one wants anymore, right, in Sinclair. For what reason? I'm not sure what the interest is to buy up all these old networks, but they are, and they're becoming a large conglomerate because of it. I don't quite understand the strategy though. But if you have a smaller wrestling company and you're able to get it financed just a little bit, internet's the way to go. But I just don't know if we're not there yet, clearly, but it's the way to go.
Yeah, and I mean, as you know this. I love conspiracy theories. I don't really believe all of them, but I do love them. But one thing that you can't deny about what you just said is that back in the day, and I mean like just 30 years ago, there were like five times as many companies around, dude. And now there's like four. I mean, it really does feel like there's like four companies. And I totally could see, once Vince McMahon passes and a few years have gone by, I could totally see Hunter and Steph selling that shit off to Disney. Like, I totally could see it. Like, before I couldn't, now I totally can. And it's one of those things where it's going to keep being like that. And that's the thing, like you said, you hit the nail on the head. It's just never going to be the same. Not to mention the whole thing was competition. It's just, it's never going to happen. You know, for fans who don't really understand, the thing is, a lot of wrestling fans are really in the bubble. Like, a lot of them really are, unfortunately. And they don't understand that one of the reasons why WCW was able to compete, it wasn't just the fact that Turner had money and they took all the WWF guys and they went on Monday nights. That's not really what it, like, that's only some of the reason. The other reason was because they had 30 years of history on the Turner networks. There were people that grew up with wrestling. The NWA, Georgia Championship Wrestling, UWF, all this stuff was on Turner. You know, and they had that lineage. Like, even though, you know, people say that WCW belt is not the NWA belt, they promoted it as such. You know, this is the belt that Hackett Smith won from Gotch in 1905. And they had all that history. TNA has, you know, 11 years of history. What does that belt mean? You know, what does that company and that history mean? Global Force has like 4 months of history, you know what I mean? So it's just, it's going to be impossible for anybody to ever really compete. I just don't see it. Because if you're a young wrestler who's getting into the wrestling business, an indie guy, your goal is to go to WWE. Your goal is not to go to TNA. I don't know who, unless you're a mark, your goal is to go to WWE because that's the company that has historically been the most successful, and they're the only game in town. So there's just no, like you said, there's no market share for another company to come around and compete. They can still exist, but compete and actually put the WWF to where they were in 97, where Vince was, you know, selling off, you know, to cutting his own paychecks and shit, it's just never going to happen.
So what's interesting to me about this whole bubble thing with World Wrestling Entertainment is that you have a population of very well-financed people who aren't interested so much in... I mean, I don't understand how these well-funded people were caught flat-footed on this thing, because if for example, if WWE tells you, yeah, we have an opportunity to get a television deal that's similar to NASCAR, right, with the $800 million a year deal NASCAR got. I mean, without being someone who looks at this stuff on a daily basis, I mean, that seems comical, right? I mean, that WWE would get $800 million considering how they've been looked at historically by people in sponsorship positions, how they were attacked in the early 2000s for their product. I mean, professional wrestling has never been considered, you know, product that people, I guess, with well-off financial means are interested in. So to think that they were going to get a big deal like NASCAR is going to get, which even though NASCAR isn't looked at as positively either, it's still a sport. It's still a something that is widely more popular than professional wrestling.
Well, yeah, and they draw like 100,000 people to those races.
Exactly.
Like, they did 100,000.
So you have a lot of money, and you consider these people to be somewhat smart, obviously, if they're if this is their job. I wonder how they were caught flat-footed with this thing.
Well, I think that the WWE, a lot of people in the higher levels, I think they believe they're more popular than they actually are. And that's the thing. It's that bubble thing because, I mean, here's the thing that really kind of makes me question and scratch my head. They wanted to get a big NBC Universal or whoever, a big television deal, so they went around saying that they were sport and so on and so forth. You know, a lot of people ask, like I've had somebody ask me, you know, why is there a wrestling stigma? Like, what is the problem with pro wrestling? And a lot of it is not WWE's fault. A lot of it is, you know, the fact that, you know, it's fake and people look at it like that, it's lowbrow, you know, and it's never been seen as this, like, theatrical deal. And not just that, but also, you know, that, like, it's just got that whole, you know, it's fake. But a lot of it is their fault, because for about three decades, I mean, all we've gotten in the major media is the steroid scandal, the child molestation scandal, the Benoit murder-suicide, the steroids, just all these different things that we've gotten throughout the years that have given the company negative publicity. But the thing that bugs me is this company has been calling themselves entertainment and has been promoting themselves consistently for 25 years. They've been saying, we're not a sport, we've never been a sport, we're entertainment, we're Broadway, you know, we compete with the Muppets, and all this nonsense they've been saying, and they did it just because they didn't want to compete with sports, and because of the whole thing in Pennsylvania where Vince didn't want to pay taxes on the building and that whole thing, right? But now that the sports are getting all this money, NASCAR, soccer, NFL, NBA, now it's convenient for them to be calling themselves a sport? No, bro. You have basically brainwashed the entire world for 25 years that this is not a sport, we're entertainment. And now you want to be a sport again? It doesn't work that way, dude. If a girl cheats on you three times and you think she's going to be faithful the fourth time, you're an idiot.
We're looking at a situation where tomorrow two executives may be fired over this.
Maybe. And people are quitting left and right, too.
You know, and the network issues aside, right, I think it'd be good to get Chris Harrington back on to discuss, you know, what – with the numbers where they are, what does it mean for the network going forward? Because they didn't hit the projections. And that's not, you know, depending on how much they needed to hit those projections. You know, listening to Dave Meltzer discuss it, it sounds like they needed to hit the number, you know, a million subscribers or whatever the number was. And something else interesting is that Meltzer on his podcast keeps talking about the survey that said 80 million people were interested in professional wrestling.
Yeah, there's like a fan in every household or something like that.
There's a fan in every household. I mean, how, when you discuss the wrestling bubble, I mean, how, is it a lead bubble? I mean, when you go to these houses and you go to these, I mean, you go to these house shows, I mean, you're not pulling in 40,000 people at these house shows. Wouldn't that tell you that maybe we're not? And at one point, they were doing giant house shows, right? I mean, non-television shows used to be giant for the company.
That's right.
And now they're not. 99,000, and now they're not. So, I mean, how could you even look at that thing and not see it for the comedy that it was?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't understand how, and I feel weird saying this because I have no history as an accountant. I don't have a master's degree in finance. I can't sit here and crunch numbers like the guys the WWE hires can. But you're right. It seems like such ignorant shit. Like, it seems like, are you stupid? Like, are you that stupid to believe that? Like, are you really that stupid? Like, you know, whoever just made this decision, you're playing with people's money, dude, and that's why I think the shareholders said fuck it, because you're playing with people's money now. You're basically going around saying, okay, 80 million, this and that, and anybody who has a brain can look and say, wait a minute, you can't even sell out your TV tapings half the time. So it's like, you're playing with people's money, and I think that the shareholders said, okay, this company is becoming even more of a joke. Even though I love the network and I love the direction of the company the last couple months, financially, it's becoming a joke. I don't really want to deal with this right now.
Yes, and at the end of the day, when you want to talk about the public perception of the company, you start messing around with power players like these investment firms and the people that get balls rolling. That is not a good thing for your company. And what's interesting is that TNA has their own separate issues. There's like one person who I see online who's speaking positively of these negotiations. No one else is even saying a word because there isn't much being put out there. And that could either be good or bad. But
Let me ask you a question real quick.
A lot of other DNA is making you think it isn't going well. But what's your question?
Well, my question is, now correct me if I'm wrong. I might be wrong on this one. That's why I'm asking you. Usually, these TV stations, they announce the fall schedule, like, way ahead of time. And TNA has not been announced as being as part of Spike TV. So what I'm trying to figure out, what the big mystery here is, are they getting renewed or not? Because usually we would know by now, and we don't know yet. So are they keeping it a secret they're going under, or are they keeping it a secret they're not going under? See, that's what I'm kind of mixed up about here.
Well, you know, I mean, there's the big presentations that they give every year, and I've seen word leak out. You know, there's people that follow this a lot closer than I do, but I've seen things leak out, like ABC announced two shows that they're picking up, I believe, for the fall. One's Fresh Off the Boat, which I'm very excited for, because it's written off the memoirs of this guy who I find very funny online. Again, there's media I consume online. There's a lot of people that I think are very concerned. You know, you see reports every week at Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer that talent is openly asking Ring of Honor and Global Force Wrestling are there opportunities for them. There's a reason to be concerned in TNA, I believe, because without the television, they're not going to go to being an independent company. And
no, I'm done.
And we saw yesterday that the minor league baseball team that TNA does the deal with every year, this year they're going with the Ring of Honor. And so...
Weird.
Well, you know, and that could be, that could mean a number of things, but I wouldn't necessarily see that as, you know, if I had a company I was doing business with every year, and then all of a sudden I decided to go in a different direction, I don't think that's a positive thing. I don't think it's a positive story for TNA. It may not be that big of a story, but I don't think it's a positive story for TNA.
And that's the thing, the without TV, they're done. I mean, Pride Fighting Championships, dude. Pride Fighting did 50,000 to 60,000 people in the Tokyo Dome for two or three times a year. They had Saitama Super Arena, 50,000 people, just huge numbers. And when they lost their TV, they were dead. So without TV, when you're a TV company, you're done. I mean, I don't know about you, but I can't watch a TNA product. I mean, there was a time period, right, a couple of years ago where everybody was kind of making fun of TNA and saying how horrible it was, but all the TNA supporters would say, well, we have AJ Styles, we have Chris Daniels, we have better wrestlers. They can't even say that anymore. So what's the reason I'm even watching at this point?
The Pride thing happened. I mean, I lived in Japan at the time the Pride thing happened.
Really?
That thing happened. That thing happened quick. I mean, as soon as the television went away, I went to a show after they lost TV. It was at the Osaka Dome, and it was still a big crowd. It was for the first round of the Openweight Tournament. And, I mean, all that Openweight Tournament stuff, I believe that was after they had lost the television deal. And the thing was is that they had no more money coming in from TV. And so they would put on these big, elaborate shows. And lose.
They lost a lot of guys, right?
They did. And you'd lose money up front on the shows, and the TV would help make up for it. And that went away. And then also there was a big competition from it was before Dream, it was Heroes. Because if you remember, it was the K1 MMA company, because the Pride wasn't able to create. I mean, they had Yoshida. They lost Sakuraba in a contract dispute. Sakuraba went to Heroes, and Heroes had Masato, and they had who was a K1 guy, and they also had Kid Yamamoto.
Yamamoto, that's right.
Yeah, and so I remember the New Year's shows. I mean, the K1 New Year's shows toward the end, the Dynamites. I remember those shows being just as good or a little bit better than the Pride New Year shows at the same time, especially at the end when Pride was scrambling. Because I remember there was a year they did Kid Yamamoto against Masato. That was a huge match. They did Masato, the next year they did Masato in a fight, and they did, I think, Geeky Sudo against Kid Yamamoto. Those were big fights. So at the time Pride was going down, K1 and Heroes, they were able to fill a little bit of the void, but they didn't have the international appeal as much. It was more of a Japanese-based kind of thing.
Yeah, Fry was starting to run in Vegas, too, for a couple shows, which I didn't go to, and I wish I would have.
Yeah, those certainly would have been cool shows to go to at the end, at the very, very end. next weekend we have a UFC show, which I don't really hear anyone really talking about. We have TJ Dillashaw against Hidden Brown, the main event.
Well, yeah, look what you just said.
Jake Ellenberger, Robbie Lawler, and Daniel Cormier, and Dan Henderson, the semi-mains. The UFC applied a real patch kind of thing to fill this show, right? Because at one point the show had no fights, and they were able to finally put together fights, pull fights from other shows. We could talk about this show. It looks to be a good show on paper, but moving forward for the UFC, what are your thoughts on them moving forward?
I mean, I don't know if you've noticed. I don't know if you picked up on this little stat, but a buddy of ours over on Fight Game Blog, Doan, sent over an email to us, and he said that this is crazy. So there is a UFC every Saturday until August. There's literally a new UFC every single Saturday until August. And when you look at these cards, not only is there one every Saturday, there's also going to be multiple. I think one of those shows, they're going to have two shows going on at once, which is the whole thing Dana White wanted to do, where he wanted to have more than one show at once. And then they're also going to have, which is kind of weird, they're doing the July 5th pay-per-view, and then the day after, they're doing a TV special. I mean, we've talked about it before, bro. It's just, it's a combination of too many shows and no stars. That's pretty much it. Like, if they had stars, maybe they could fill some of these shows. Me, personally, I only have interest in the July 5th show and in that TV special the next day. That's what I'm really going to watch. Everything else I couldn't care less about. Well, except for that Cormier-Henderson fight. I am interested in that, but it's just too much, dude. It's legitimately too much, and guys who nobody even knows.
Do you follow boxing?
A little bit.
Okay.
I would say I'm a casual.
So I got my mind blown last weekend. I was online, and someone was discussing combat sports with me, and they thought I was a boxing fan more than an MMA fan. And they were telling me about how I needed to check out this stuff and how I needed to watch HDNet. And it really struck me that
HDNet.
Or, you know, Access TV.
I forgot to change their name.
Yeah, they were telling me about how I needed to watch Access TV. And the thing that really struck me is that boxing is doing it better than MMA this year. And that's the first year since I've become an MMA fan I can truly say that. I mean, before, I believe that MMA was going in the right direction. Even though Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao were able to do this monstrous buy rate, fact is UFC were turning in on average, not on average, but throughout the year they were doing, you know, better buy rates cumulatively. They had more stars than boxing. This year, Ronda Rousey is a star, but I don't even know what that means. She's not a star in the way Brock Lesnar was a star as far as drawing pay-per-view, right?
Or GSP.
No. Weidman, I think people have talked themselves into him being a star. I've heard smart people say it enough, but I don't believe it.
I don't believe it either, dude. I don't think he's that big. I mean, a star in the sense of he being Anderson Silva. I hate to say it, dude, but he might go down as the guy who beat Anderson Silva, especially if he loses that title very soon. That's going to be his history, man, the guy who beat Anderson Silva. But you know what? That's better than being like, you know, Brock Larson or
yeah.
One of those guys.
Yeah, but the fact is, I mean, he might be – I mean, that. Listen, I mean, the fact is that they're putting Weidman and Ronda together again on July 5th. They think that's a special sauce. And, you know, that show – with Chael and Vandalay being in the possibility of that fight not happening, I think July 5th is going to be huge. But what's interesting is that right now I'm hearing speculation of 800,000, and that's interesting to me because I figured you'd start off with a number like a million because that's what they did in December, and I understand it was two rematches and the Ultimate Fighter was propelling it. But
it was Silva.
Yeah, it was Silva too, but, you know, you have – Weidman and Ronda, who are the two biggest stars. You have Chael and Vanderlei, which they're going to put material out there. You're not going to be able to see every episode of Tough, but they're going to put material out there. And you have Uriah Faber on the show as well. And $800,000 for that event. I mean, I think that's disastrous.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good for 2014 numbers, right? Like that's good for this year. Disastrous for a couple of years ago, I would say. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess in the history of the company, I mean, for an event that large, I mean, that's again. That's,
I know it should be bigger.
Should be a lot bigger, and like I said, I think this is the first year boxing is going to a more scaled back model, and this is the first. This year and last year, the first years that I've really followed boxing as a whole, and the more scaled back model. Putting the stars on big television broadcasts, the big fights are saved for pay-per-view, and it's quite refreshing as compared to the UFC model where there is so much content. And what's interesting is I saw someone who works for Zions, one of the head people at Zions, they had tweeted to Dana White, like, oh, I can't believe people complain about getting all these fights. This is like after the Eric Silva, Matt Brown fight. I have a secret for Dana White.
He's lost his mind, bro. He's in his own bubble.
He is, but the Zions executive, everyone in MMA, no one saw that Matt Brown-Eric Silva fight. You can replay it 100 times. No one saw it.
DJ did.
Well,
DJ saw it.
Yeah, he did, but no one else saw that fight. I didn't even watch the rest of the show, and so what happens is, and here's the secret: when you have a lot of content, not everyone's going to watch all your content. Therefore,
there you
your content becomes less meaningful.
And there you go. Yeah, it's scarcity, the reverse scarcity effect, basically.
Exactly, and where you want your content is to where people want more. But you don't want people not consuming your content. And
you know, it's interesting because one thing I want to point out is, you know, a few years ago, 06, 07, even before the big UFC boom, when they had, like, a pay-per-view every 2 months, right? That's what it was. It was bi-monthly or whatever. I would gather huge crowds over to the sports bar, to my house. I mean, we had, you know, there were maybe 15, 20 people splitting the cost for the pay-per-views. And it's funny because technically, like scientifically, the fighters back then were nowhere compared to the ones that are around now, like athletically. These guys now are all animals, every one of them. Back then, you had animals, but there weren't that many. And yet, it was so much more interesting back then, and people always came. They were excited for the fights. But when you're seeing all these free fights on TV, it's like it doesn't matter because when you're seeing too much of anything, even if it's like, you know, even if you have a big star, still, too much of everything is just, it's not a good thing. And then people don't come around no more, man. I haven't been in a big group for a long time. Even with the December show, I was in a big group, but it wasn't as big as it used to be. It's just too many shows, honestly. I mean, I know it's been said to death, but it's too many shows. I feel that what they have to do is totally change that model. And rather than just keep putting out fights and fights and fights and fights and fights, they need to start doing personality profiles on all these guys so that we get to know them, you know. Because the bottom line is that everybody in the world has a story. Some people have more compelling stories than others, but all those supposed white guys with tattoos, that's what MMA's become, right? They all have a story. There's something about them. Maybe they were adopted. Maybe they have a big stamp collection. Maybe they used to drive cars and race cars in the streets. And all those guys have a story, and if you tell the story, you're going to have fans be like, okay, you know what, I can relate to that guy. Like, okay, that guy's cool now, you know. And that's worked on The Ultimate Fighter the first couple years, you know. But they haven't done that. It's just been fight, and those stupid fucking backstage promos with the black background where they're just talking, oh, I'm going to use my submissions. Bro, it's like nobody cares about that. They want to know who you are. They want to know your story and get behind it, you know.
I think, and again, UFC is taking over a lot of the market share. It's going to be hard for any of these companies.
Very hard.
But there is a lot of room, and to go backwards to what we were talking about earlier, there is a lot of room for these fighters to make themselves into stars independent of the company, because the company is more and more moving toward, and that was always the problem with WWE, and it's still a problem, but UFC is doing it on steroids and HGH, where they are promoting the UFC above and its brands above everything. And we've seen it to the tournament of the bigness of the fights, right?
When you do that, you're de-emphasizing the draws. You're basically killing all the draws, and you're turning it into a circus. Like, you know, it's a traveling circus act, which is what wrestling's become.
Right. And so you have someone like Ronda Rousey, who's a star, and you know, there's very smart people who questioned that in the past. I think it's undeniable now. But she's not a star in the way that I think a lot of people are interested in her fighting. I think there's still a segment of the population that's not really interested in her fighting, but they're interested in Ronda Rousey. And I think as soon as other Ronda Rousey content becomes available, such as the movies, such as if she were ever to do like a reality show or something, I think people would consume that type of content. But if you're a fighter, you got to figure out how to move in that direction to where people can consume you in other ways than just fighting, because the reality is that people aren't interested in consuming as much fighting. And so you're going to have to figure out how to be a transition, you know, like a transitional star above just your own sport. And unfortunately, a lot of these fighters, the management, I don't even know if they have mechanisms to be able to do this for these guys. But that's kind of what I think they need to do, and kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know what you're saying. I mean, I think that they can do it, but there's only so much they can do without getting the proper television time. You know what I mean? That's the thing. Like, if one of these undercard guys, like a Matt Brown, if he wants to, like, really get over, he's going to need, you know, some TV time, and they're going to need to do some kind of personality profile. They're going to have to do something, you know what I mean, to get people to know who this guy is and why you should care about him. It's like a lot of people criticized LeBron James back in 2010 when he had that TV special where he's like, you know, I'm going to be going to Miami, that one-hour special where the first 45 minutes was just highlights. I thought that was brilliant, dude, because that right there is like you're basically making people hate you and or love you, depending on what city you're in, right? And you have this hour special devoted just to you. And yeah, it might be a little self-centered. Okay, I gotta get that. It might be a little cocky, but that's what works, dude, like that. And now, and that's all anybody was talking about that whole year was LeBron James going to Miami. And that's kind of what MMA needs to do. Just do something like that, you know, and these fighters can do that and get the attention put on them.
Well, and real quick before we got to go, we're running out of time, here's the reality, is that UFC, because they've sucked up so much of the market share, that everyone applauded when Gilbert Melendez was able to get his deal, right? Gilbert Melendez is a rarity, and Gilbert Melendez will not be the rule as far as these fighter contracts. And the situation going on with Nate Diaz, I feel, is criminally undercovered. And people who have access to Nate Diaz and Nick Diaz and aren't properly expressing their story, in my opinion, that's just criminal journalism, because they have a legitimate point that now the way they're going about handling it, I mean, we can have a conversation about. But the fact is that UFC is able to dictate how much these guys make, and the percentages are not, they're not anywhere close to the standard. They're not anywhere close to what is competitive. And these guys are becoming devalued more and more. So the UFC is more and more able to pay these guys less and less. And I don't know how much part of that the strategy is, but it's got to be in there, man. It has to be in there. Well, thank you, Big D, for joining me this week. If people are interested in hearing more conversation from you, especially about 99 Nitros, where can they find it?
Not yet, but they will eventually. So I'll just plug my two projects, my pro wrestling-related projects that I got going on right now real quick, just so everybody checks it out. If you like classic pro wrestling, even stuff that's not so classic, I mean like everything that's already happened in pro wrestling, I got two shows. I got a podcast miniseries called WrestleMania 30 for 30 with Garrett Gonzalez, who's been on the show, and Brandon Draven, somebody who has watched you wrestle live a bunch of times back in the West Coast. And we do these shows where we review WrestleMania. I plugged them on here before. We do all 30 WrestleManias. We're up at 25 right now. Very in-depth, very long show. So if you're working and you got your iPod on and, you know, you got your headphones in, these shows are 3 to 4 hours long. but they're very in-depth, lots of information, and I mean lots of information, just about all the people inside of it, the storyline going into WrestleMania, the story behind the show, just a lot of behind-the-scenes information. You're not going to get that anywhere else, especially from WWE, because, you know, it's a lot of stuff they don't want you to know. And then the other project I have is a spin-off to that miniseries, which is not going to be a miniseries, but it's called the K-Fabulous Lucha Brothers Show, where myself and Draven go back and we review old pay-per-views on the network, and we're going to do other stuff too now on the network, but we're starting with the network first, so that's easy to follow for everybody who has a network. And the first episode we did Royal Rumble 92, we did New Blood Rising 2000, and this week, sometime this week or maybe next week, is going to premiere the third episode where we're going to be doing In Your House, Good Friends, Better Enemies, followed by King of the Ring 93. So we're just going to go through and just review different shows, tell the story. It's not just going to be match-by-match reviews. So that's boring. We're going to tell the story of the show. We're going to give you behind, you know, background to all these different wrestlers that you may or may not know. So, and it's always a fun time. It's always wacky, totally different than any other podcast out there. So check that out. SuperFriendsUniverse.com. They're both on there. Just go to Podcast Archive and you'll have a drop down. As everything's there.
There you go. And that ends the show for this week. Thank you very much for listening.
All right, well, that's okay.